Dublin's Talking Sport with Ken Doherty and Reggie Corrigan.
Sponsored by InsureMyVan.ie. Reduce your price, not your cover.
On Sunshine 106.8.
Just coming back from the offside position, but Shane Long was definitely onside. Shane Long!
A very good morning to you. I'm Reggie Corrigan and welcome to Dublin's Talking Sport on Sunshine 106.8 with thanks to InsureMyVan.ie. Well, it's an absolutely packed show this morning. Loads to talk about. In NFL, Stephen O'Brien will be catching up with us, of course, from the UK Packers podcast to recap on last week's news and look ahead to this weekend's fixtures in the NFL. And also, he'll give us his ACCA for week number 10. In racing, Dave Weldon, who's been having a really good run of things from the Racing Hour podcast, will be previewing this week's races as well. An impressive run of form he's had in the last few weeks, and he'll give us his lucky 15 for this week as well. We're going to catch up with Ken, who of course is over in the UK in his bubble for all of snooker over there, but we want to talk to him a little bit about the snooker, but also about the Masters, Ken being such a keen golf fan, and what his thoughts are so far and how things are going in Augusta. It was a pretty busy night last night in rugby as well. Unfortunately, the French game was called off, but Ireland put in a fantastic performance, getting a great win in that. Myself and Peter Breen, who's in studio with me today, will be looking back on that stunning performance from Ireland last night as they beat Wales convincingly 32-9. In GAA, there's loads to talk about. Mickey Hart, of course, stepping down. Cork beating Kerry, and the Dubs continuing on their way with a great win last week against Westmeath. So Declan Drake will be talking to us to look back on all of those things and, of course, give us a reaction of the Dublin ladies claiming a last four spot in the All-Ireland Senior Football Championships. In football, Alan Cawley of Cawley's Call. He'll talk to us about Ireland's loss against England during the week in the international friendly and Stephen Kenny's next two Nation League games against Wales and Bulgaria. So, loads to come on the show. We'd love to hear from you if you could like to get in touch with us on text us indeed on 087 11 55 777. And of course, we're on Facebook, Dublin's Talking Sport, Twitter at Sport 1068, and Instagram, Dublin's Talking Sport 1068. Well, as I said, Peter Breen is in studio with me, as is Blaine, to go through the headlines for this morning. And, well, Peter, it's kind of pretty jam packed, isn't it?
Yeah, it was funny. We were going to be talking about, was it events in Augusta? Was it events in Dublin? And actually, what my eyes have been drawn to is events in New Zealand, because Argentina have beaten New Zealand for the first time in their history, 25-15. That match had just finished in the last hour.
And they beat them well, Peter. They were all over them all morning in that game.
Yeah, Nicolas Sanchez scored all the points, all 25 points. He got a try, six penalties and a conversion. And it's a massive result in the context of sport, particularly rugby union. We want to see more and more teams break away from the top six or eight. And obviously Argentina have been around for a long period. But with the encouragement with the Autumn Nations Cup, with Georgia and Fiji involved, with Japan now becoming a force, that can only be a good thing for rugby. And I think it's something that will really capture the imagination, I think, of rugby followers across the world. And good on them. Like, it's, you know, given that New Zealand were so battle-hardened, okay, they'd lost last week against Australia, but you know, I think it was probably people.
When was the last time they lost two in a row?
I don't know. It's a very good question, but it's the first. But like, this is Argentina's first test in 13 months.
Yeah, it's amazing.
You know, and
they were worthy winners, no question about it. Worthy winners. I was watching a bit of it earlier on this morning. So I think it started about 6:30. I was sitting there watching it, and they were smashing the All Blacks, no doubt about it. So we'll have to look up the history books and see when was the last time that New Zealand lost two in a row, because it's not a very common thing. But it's great for the Tri Nations, as you said. I think it's wonderful because, you know, South Africa had pulled out of that the championship down under and kind of left it all up in the air. Would Argentina be any use? Would they be able to compete? And here we go. They've beaten them. So well done.
Look, it also shows New Zealand now, Australia have had their troubles, Ireland are going through change with new management, Wales have major troubles, England are going through change, France. So it's a really interesting time in the globalisation of the sport. And I know we're just starting a new World Cup cycle, but, you know, possibly this bodes well. It's really important for shaking up what can be quite a predictable sport for the most part. And look, results like this should be embraced. So thankfully, Argentina have got us off to a bright mood. Maybe not if you're a New Zealand follower, but look, it's encouraging, I'd say, particularly on the back of Ireland's win last night as well.
Yeah, Blaine, our producer, has just informed me that the last time they lost two in a row was in 1998 against South Africa, Wellington, and I think in Auckland. So that's going back quite a bit of time. Well done to the Argentinians, the Pumas, as they're known. Other good news as well, I see Katie Taylor is fighting a little bit later on. Let's have a little listen to Katie there.
This is definitely an historic night, and when I did turn pro 4 years ago, I didn't think I'd be in this position where I'm headlining a big show with three world title fights, and three of those fights are actually female fights. This is an absolute, as I said, historic night.
Historic night. Love, Katie. What a wonderful sports ambassador for this country that she is. And putting all the belts on the line. And as she says in her headline in The Independent this morning, she turned around and said, I never get sick of looking at all the belts. And that's her all over. She's just an unbelievable competitor, and putting them on the line again later on tonight.
Yeah, she's an incredible winner. She's an incredible ambassador for Ireland. And let's hope she's better looking Wembley than our footballers did on Thursday night.
Oh, God, yeah, that's for sure. We just weren't even at the races. But we'll talk to Alan Cawley a little bit later on about that. What else is happening?
So we mentioned Ireland rugby. I know we're going to cover it more in our segment after 10, but a lot of encouraging signs from the Ireland performance last night. Great to see James Lowe score on his debut. Jamison Gibson-Park I thought was superb. I know Caelan Doris got the player of the match. But a lot of really good encouraging performances. Quinn Rue, I thought, was very strong at second row as well. That
scored
was his 13th appearance, yeah. But he's a real bombastic kind of enforcer.
Certainly added bulk to that scrum. Yeah. Seemed to destroy Wales. The scrum was decimated in the first half, and I think Rue and Porter were two of the main instigators to that. So you're right, adds a lot of power. Not someone that I've kind of ever been championing, to be honest with you, Rue. I've always felt that there was better combos there with Henderson and Ryan and other things like that, but certainly he put down a marker last night for himself.
Yeah, and all of a sudden we've got five top quality scrum halves on which to choose from with Jamison Gibson-Park. I thought Conor Murray was very strong when he came on. I know he slotted in as a filler in out half. We know he's got a great boot. He showed that when Ireland beat the All Blacks in Chicago a couple of years back, but he's he just looked very comfortable, didn't he?
Kicked well. I find it very, very interesting now. Jamison Gibson-Park been given huge praise. I saw plenty of, rugby pundits tweeting it, and people who know the game inside out tweeting that fact that, they just felt that Jamison Gibson-Park's performance was amazing, and that Ireland were getting much faster service. And I was thinking to myself, there's a little bit of a conundrum coming up here now for Conor Murray. How difficult is it going to be for him after a big performance like that? What's Andy Farrell going to do? He's mixed things around for a reason. He wants to look at different combos. I didn't think his combination was going to be Gibson-Park and Murray at 10, but that's been forced on him. But it'll be interesting to see what happens now if Johnny Sexton doesn't make it back in time from that hamstring injury.
Yeah, and I think also having a scrum half who kicks isn't unusual. We know John Cooney has a great record up in Ulster, but Luke McGrath is a superb kicker as well. He doesn't kick at all that often or ever with Leinster, but a superb kicker. And then there's Kieran Marmion as well. Yeah. So all of a sudden, in certain areas, Ireland has very strong stocks of players, but it's just, I suppose, A, getting them all fit, then giving the real headache to Andy Farrell. But I know we'll cover that a lot later.
Exactly.
Ireland play Wales in football tomorrow afternoon, and that's on at 5 o'clock. It's an absolutely decimated Ireland squad, and you're just looking at the people who are now the players who are unavailable. John Egan, Harry Arter, Alan Brown now has COVID, and then that joins Enda Stephen, Seamus Coleman, Aaron Connolly, James McCarthy. I'd say Stephen Kenny, I don't know whether he's got a thing with black cats or stepping on cracks or what's going on in his life, but this, he just has had no luck.
He
has
had much luck, there's no question about it. I watched the Welsh USA game during the week. Mother of God, it was like watching paint dry. So Wales are not a big force either. They're certainly not the force they may have been a few years back in terms of, us against Wales. It always felt Wales had the slight edge. I don't think so now, but it's just with all these injuries. I feel very sorry for Kenny, because I think if he had a full squad available to him, now would be an ideal chance to get Wales, you know?
Yeah, I think actually the match that's most interesting me in terms of Irish football this weekend is the under-21s. They're playing tomorrow, and I think that team with the Troy Parrots and all these exciting players in it are going to show hopefully a glimpse into an exciting future. So that match is on at 12:30 against Iceland in Tala Stadium, and that's televised as well. So that'll be really interesting, I think, for people tomorrow who are looking to tune in and get a glimpse of the future. But certainly you can't judge Stephen Kenny at the moment. I'm sorry, like, it's, I know international football, you don't hand out caps nilly willy, but you know, he hasn't had a chance to pick his full team, so he's going to need a longer period, I think, of adjustment and to get a sense of what he has and what he has available to him. But look, I think the result of the week in terms of football was Scotland.
Yeah,
it was brilliant to see them back in a major tournament. They're going to be facing England in the Euros next summer, so that's going to be something to really whet the appetite. Great disappointment that Northern Ireland didn't get there, but again, they left everything out on the field against Slovakia. So you know, international football has come under the scrutiny, I think, over the last couple of weeks, with people travelling and higher risk and whatnot with COVID. But isn't it nice to talk about football and the romance of football? And David Marshall, I'd say, will never have to buy a drink again in his life in Scotland. And good luck to them. It was a great achievement.
Absolutely.
And you know what, actually, Peter, as you were just talking about with the Euros going ahead, actually, there's been some speculation that actually Ireland might get some extra games in the Euros. So, you know, obviously, the Euros are supposed to be held next year. They are in 12 different countries, different cities in all of Europe. But they're looking at, because obviously travel might have to be reduced with COVID, they're thinking that England and Ireland will get a lot more games, and they actually could both be co-hosting the Euros.
Yeah, no, I think UEFA have, there's been a lot of speculation, but I think UEFA have come out and said, look, they're going to look at everything, but their intention is very much to have it in the 12 host cities, of which Dublin has 3 pool games and last 16. Now, the likely last 16, if you can ever suggest the word likely when it comes to sport, could be England against Germany. But of course, Germany have a very tough group as well. So it's, look, there's a lot of speculation. At the moment, it's very much keep it as is, because all 12 cities will be mobilised trying to prepare for these matches. So, look, it'll be interesting to see what happens.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely, no doubt about it. Another news, Mo Salah has tested positive for COVID-19, so unfortunately for him, the Liverpool player is out of Egypt's Africa Cup Nations qualifier with Togo. That's unfortunate for him. In other news as well, which is better news, I think, is the Premier League have confirmed its controversial pay-per-view television model has been scrapped. There was loads of backlash about that. $16.95 to watch a match, even though you had BT package and you had sport package, and then you go to watch the match and it's pay-per-view, but it's been scrapped until at least the first week in January. So now all the matches will be available for the fans to watch using their local broadcast partner. So nothing wrong with that decision.
Also, in the Masters, we haven't touched on, obviously, the biggest weekend of the golfing year. We have a 4-way tie at the top. I know we'll cover it more with Ken Doherty later, but just looking, it was funny, Reggie, you and I were looking down the leaderboard, and Tiger Woods 4 under, Rory McIlroy 3 under after a disastrous first round, claims it back in the second round. So it's going to be an amazing last 2 rounds.
It's brilliant. It really is brilliant. There's a few names up there you wouldn't have expected. Certainly Answer there at 9 under is not the one that you'd expect to have been leading at this stage. I think what's amazing, and I've been glued to it, is because of the time of year and the change of weather, it's a totally different competition. It's a totally different Masters. The trees look magnificent with the autumn colours and all the rest of it. But apart from that, the ground is so soft that the ball is just sticking to the green, and these lads are lobbing it in from 150 feet in the air, the way they're able to get the height on the ball. And it's just plugging in the greens almost, so it doesn't have the normal run, or, you know, the contours of the green are not as difficult on the players as it would have been maybe in the firmer ground. So with that in mind, certainly when you look to someone like Rory, who, or any of the European players who might be a little bit more used to that softer ground, you would have thought that they would do well. You see the likes of Fleetwood there at 7 under, Willett 7 under, Ram, of course, the Spaniard at 8 under. These guys probably have good experience from their European days as well that will stand to them. But certainly Woods is still a big fancy of mine. I still think he has chances of going with it. Casey as well, of course, someone who started off particularly well. But McIlroy, I should say, has to be very strongly considered, even after, as you said, that bad start, to still be there and 3-6 off the lead with plenty of time left to go on it. I think it's a good shout. There's a good chance that Rory could go well in this.
Yeah, there's a lot of incomplete rounds as well because of the poor weather, particularly on day one. And Shane Lowry and Graham McDowell are both inside the cut. They're both level par. So look, let's hope that they can string a few birdies together and get back up the leaderboard again. 9 shots off, not impossible. And Shane Lowry has shown time and time again that, you know, when he gets a bit between his teeth, he's so dangerous. So, it makes for it. And just for clarity, it's Cameron Smith, Abraham Anser, Justin Thomas and Dustin Johnson who are leading on 9-under. And then you've got Matsuyama and John Rahm on 8-under. So it's really making up to be a great weekend of golf action as well.
Oh, cracking. And the beauty of it is the time difference is spot on. So you can take over the television and watch it all weekend. In GAA, of course, the news all over every paper you pick up today. Mickey Hart has confirmed that he's left the role as Tyrone manager. Most successful reign in the county's history. 3 All-Ireland titles, 2003, 2005 and 2008. You know, Ulster titles, league championships, everything else. An amazing legacy he's left behind him. And it'll be interesting to see who Tyrone are going to go after now to replace him.
Yeah, 18 years at the helm in any position in sport. I know Gaelic is an amateur sport and all but name, but that's an incredible record. It's incredible durability. And, you know, given the highs and lows of his life that unfortunately we all know about as well, it shows great tenacity to stick at it. And I'm sure it was a very difficult time. It's the end of an era. It starts a new chapter for Tyrone. And let's see how it goes. But certainly wish him well. He's contributed an awful lot to the game.
Excellent stuff. OK, we'll talk to Declan Drake about that a little bit later on after 10 o'clock. It's time to turn our attention now to NFL. I'm delighted to be joined, as always, by Stephen O'Brien of the UK Packers podcast. Morning, Stephen. How are you, bud?
I'm good, Reg. How are you?
Very well, thanks. Very well indeed. Yeah, it's been... I got to watch that Chargers game last week and I really enjoyed it. But by God, at the end, that incomplete pass. He fumbled it just as he hit the deck. I could not believe it was that call in overtime.
The fact as well, they called it a touchdown. Yes. The more painful part, and everyone's celebrating and sort of thinking about the champagne that's going to flow on the flight home. All of a sudden, they pull it back. But look, I was in Iraq, because that's what's so annoying about the ACA lately, Reg, is that usually we get some fair, decent odds on games that are kind of more 50-50 that I delved into and sort of thought, no, I think they're going to eke it out. But lately the odds are pretty bad. But I picked the Chargers to beat the Raiders against the odds last week.
Yeah.
You know, that was the only one to come home then, because the Seattle Seahawks were locks to beat the Buffalo Bills. Because like I say, the process is a tricky game that all the experts are going with, and that was the Seahawks versus the Bills. The Bills were kind of having an upset, but that was the biggest blowout of the week. And then, yeah, the Chargers, I was like, well, at least I got one, and then that happened. So I was like, yeah, great, we're all down in the dogs now.
Well, we forgive you for that. Listen, it's been a bit of a bad week for Tampa Bay. They got absolutely hammered by the Saints on Monday Night Football, even with Antonio Brown as one of their weapons. 38-3.
Yeah, it's pretty shocking. Like, but this is what I'm saying. I mean, this is one of these things that, and they love doing it too. More so, you find the players now are having a bit more banter on social media. So what they do is they get screen grabs of like ESPN or whatever, all these stations, and where they sort of make them predict who's going to win. And everybody across the board had blanketed that the Tampa Bay Bucs were going to win, because we see this whole thing of, you know, Drew Brees for the Saints has lost it. Antonio Brown is now with the Bucs. It's a ridiculous amount of riches, but they got dismantled completely. So it's mad when you see the experts all pick a game. And anyway, I would have picked the game to be on a knife edge. I'd never write off the Saints. But certainly, I mean, I did not expect it to go the way it did, because everyone would have thought, you know, look at the two quarterbacks, it's going to be a close game. It just goes to show that, Reg, right, is that you can have all the weapons in the world, but it really is any given Sunday. You know, so quarterback play is very important. Tom Brady has an off day and the team collapses. But that's one thing, like, I mean, Aaron Rodgers is on the Pat McAfee show every Tuesday and gives a really good insight of what it's like to be a quarterback in the NFL at a high level. And from the horse's mouth, I mean, he said the impressive thing about the NFL is if you can keep consistent. So you see the Bucs, you see who they have, you see Tom Brady, you see all of these power rankings come out, and the bookies are calling them Super Bowl favorites and everything else. And then they go out and lay an egg. But that's exactly it. It's consistency is what Aaron Rodgers says is like the most impressive. So when we look at the Steelers and they're winning, you know, week in, week out, even though it's not that convincing sometimes, it's to be able to do it week in, week out. But just look at how it blows the whole race open. I mean, the Packers beat the Saints. The Bucs beat the Packers by a large margin, where everyone was questioning, oh, are the Packers for for real or not. And then the Saints go out and wax the Bucks. Mm. So it's like everyone sort of cannibalizes each other. And this is why every week you'll see teams go up in power rankings and down in power rankings. And it's keeping it exciting. Now, between COVID...
Sorry, Stephen, you're coming in and out of coverage there. I lost you there for a moment. Say that again.
When you look at games like this, Reg, you start to question whether you do know anything about the NFL.
I know.
It should have been a close game,
Question your mindset, no question about it. I see an interesting story here, and I suppose given his name, he probably shouldn't be too surprised, but Giants wide receiver Golden Tate throws the toys out of the pram, gets benched, and then comes crawling back with an apology.
Yeah, and has to sweep up the toys and put them back inside the pram. I mean, this is a guy who, he was their big name signing with the Giants after Odell Beckham Jr. left. He got a big amount of money. Look, it's never good to throw tantrums in the NFL. It never usually works out. Now, I can actually pick out times that it has, but it usually doesn't. We saw Le'Veon Bell, right? I mean, the drama that went on with him, he went from the Jets to the Kansas City Chiefs. They could potentially win the Super Bowl. Jay Ajayi went from the Dolphins to the Super Bowl winning Eagles a couple of weeks before they won it. Mm. Antonio Brown took a 14-month detour from the Steelers to the Raiders to the Patriots to the Bucks. So it can happen, but I mean, I could name a million players that threw a tantrum like Golden Tate did. You go up against your coach, you bring it into the national media, and again, he's doing this thing, Reg, this newfangled, like, I'll start liking tweets passive-aggressively to get a move. Now, I'll tell you what happened with this guy, right? He's a big-name player. He is being underutilized, for sure, but there was a trade deadline. So he was throwing all these tantrums to sort of put him up for sale, basically, to engineer a way out. It didn't pan out for him. And not only that, he gets benched for the Washington game, and that's one of the games they actually win, so his leverage is even less. He got injured at the start of the season. Then his wife comes out, and she's, again, in this newfangled way, decides to put out an Instagram story criticizing the team and then has to delete it. So the problem with him, Reg, is, and this is where his leverage has gone, is they benched him and the Giants won without him. And then he got injured in practice recently as well, which wasn't good for him. But written into all of these fellas' contracts is this thing. It's a clause that if you bring the game into disrepute or, you know, you do stuff that's detrimental to the team, is usually the stuff that they have, they strip away your bonuses. So they would have said to him, oh, you're doing stuff that's detrimental to the team. And the minute he hears those words, he's thinking, oh, well, there's a massive pay packet that's going to go. So he didn't. The trade deadline's gone. He's not going to be traded. So, of course, he's going to pick his toys back up out of the pram, which is exactly what he's
doing. Amazing how principles go out the window when money gets involved.
Yeah.
It's always the way. Having a look at the Dolphins, they took a bit of a gamble a couple of weeks ago, dropping their quarterback, Ryan Fitzpatrick, for Tua. But it's paid off so far. I mean, Tua's won both the games he's played in.
Yeah, true, Reg. I mean, it doesn't always pay off. And I know it's early doors, but people are very excited about Tua. I mean, his completion percentage against Arizona, who were a fantastic team, was just silly. It was 71% completion percentage, which is really, really good. They did. Like, that was a big gamble because their defense is playing well and it's still playing well. And Ryan Fitzpatrick, this journeyman, he was sort of throwing with reckless abandon. And the biggest risk that they took, really, Reg, was bringing a rookie quarterback in maybe too early, you know, because you put this guy out there, you start seeing ghosts. He starts getting sacked a lot. And it looked like that's what would have happened because he went out against the Rams and his first play, I think, was a strip sack. So, you know, you sort of like, we were like, oh, welcome to the NFL, you know. Mm. But he has all the tools. He was fantastic in college as well. But what I would say is a bit of a caveat with him is that his defense are kind of bailing him out. And well, not bailing him out, but they're certainly helping him anyway. You know, when your defense is stripping the ball, getting interceptions and running the ball in for scores, it's all about scoring defense. They can put the pressure on, but if you can't get it done on offense, it doesn't really matter, but his defense are actually getting scores, which is going to help him. It creates that cushion. It means that he can throw the ball, you know, not with reckless abandon, but he can be a bit freer. Now, I looked at the games that he was in just to sort of get a proper look at him. And the stuff that I like that he's doing is physically, you look at him and you're thinking, he looks the real deal. He's throwing the ball on the run and he's accurate on the run. And that's important because, A, that's a hard skill to do. But also, you're only running around back there if you're under duress. So he's under pressure and he's still making good throws. But there's one thing that will stand out, and if anybody is a bit of an anorak about NFL or football or whatever, look at that game against Arizona and go to the first quarter at the very end. And there's a really obvious instance, Reg, where you can see him, literally the cogs moving in his head, and he goes through his what's called progressions. So like you'll have a football play, and not to wax on it, we don't have all day, but like you will have maybe 4 to 5 different options on a play, and you can literally see him go from one receiver, he's not open, another receiver, he's not open, and then he hits a guy for a touchdown.
Yeah.
But you can see him clearly turn his head and look at all of his options. And that might seem obvious and understated, but for a young quarterback to do it under the pressure that he was in, I found was really impressive. He's sustaining drives, he's winning games, So it's very early doors, but he's looking really good.
Mm, and when you're in the position, that's hard to get you out of there, especially when you're winning matches. Now, for the Super Bowl fans, and I mean, we all know the most important thing about the Super Bowl is the halftime show. The singer's been announced this week, but it's a pretty lame pick, if you ask me. It's certainly not something that you'd be kind of, you know, going out of your way to tune into. It's The Weeknd. I mean, I thought they were more of a TikTok band than anything else.
Yeah, like The Weeknd, I mean, he's talented. He's been out for a while. He's had some catchy tunes. It's another one of those things where I'm with you. I think this is mediocre because I don't know what it is recently with the Super Bowl stuff. This is what everyone's tuning in for, by the way, this NFL chat. I mean, we have to talk about the entertainment.
Absolutely.
But The Weeknd, he's okay. That's personal preference. But he's one of these guys who's kind of gone off the boil recently. And they keep doing this lately. I mean, Shakira and Jennifer Lopez, and I know Reg, you got terribly excited when this was happening last year, right?
Shakira, you can't beat it. It's so good. Exactly, I say it twice.
Yeah, we all know you set your alarm just for the halftime show last year. We know this, right? That's a fact. But again, like Shakira, when's the last time she had a hit? Jennifer Lopez, she's sort of a judge on talent shows. Again, two very talented women. Some great
songs.
She's
a bit more than just a judge on talent shows now, to be fair to J-Lo.
She's hyper talented. She's a brilliant businesswoman. But I'm just saying, music-wise, which is what she's there for, right? Yeah. Well, we think, when you look at stuff like that, you're thinking, she hasn't come out with a song in ages. Maroon 5 was before that. And
that's right.
As far as I was concerned, they hadn't got a proper song out. He was another guy who was a talent show host on talent shows. So it seems like lately, Lady Gaga was another one. I mean, she hadn't had a hit. This was the woman, remember, she used to go down to the butcher's to get her dress for Grammys and stuff like that instead of actually going to designers. Coldplay before that. It just seems to me, and I don't know, like I haven't done the deep dive on the analysis on this Red Drive, but it just looks like they seem to be rolling out people who haven't had a hit in a couple of years. And I don't know why, whether that's just good agents for these artists.
Maybe we're missing some superstars. The Michael Jacksons of this world, they're just not there anymore.
Prince, the Rolling Stones, all of these people played it in the past.
Superstars, they're just not there the way we used to know them. That's the way of the world. Okay, let's have a look at your ACCA for this week. Where are we going to go with that?
All right, I'll give you the ACCA, but before I do this, really quick, someone is after betting in Vegas $99,000 on the Green Bay to beat the Jags, and it only has a $9,000 return. So that's my ACCA for this week, right?
Madness.
Head down to Bank of Ireland AIB, take out that mortgage. No, don't. Never do that. Never bet big money. But it just goes to show, they look like they're going to win, but any given Sunday. Anyway, on to the realistic one. So this is a 5.6-1 odds. There's some dodgy bets in here, and I have like a real dodgy one at the very end. But anyway, Seattle Seahawks to beat the Rams.
Okay.
That's the expert's favorite. Miami Dolphins, who we just spoke about, Tua, to beat the Los Angeles Chargers. That's an exciting one against two really young quarterbacks. That could go either way. But anyway.
That's a big one. I watched the Chargers last week, and they're a good team. It'll take a bit of beating.
Yeah, Justin Herbert, he's brilliant. I mean, it's great that we have a shining light at quarterback that are young, because it looked like the lads were churning out, just weren't doing the business. But these two are going to be very exciting. Philadelphia Eagles to beat the New York Giants. That's Golden Tate's Giants. He's injured again, so he's not going to be playing. I'm sure he goes into the Prem. And then the Saints to beat the Niners. The Saints who dismantled the Bucs. Now, if you want to change that 5.61, very exact odds, which is a 5-33 back, to a 19-1 shot, you could bet on the Panthers to beat Tampa Bay. That's not very likely, but if you put down a fiver, you get $100 back. But the Panthers, I keep betting against them, Reg, and then they keep pulling one out of the bag. And inexplicably, now Christian McCaffrey, their star, is out again. He's injured, but they could pull off a fast one. If they do, well then, you get $100 back. But anyway, that's a massive dangerous one there.
Okay, well, we like a bit of danger now and again, so we'll have two. We might have one with it and one without it. That's the way they do it. Over ourselves. Okay, Stephen, as always, great chatting to you. We'll catch up with you again next week.
Cheers, Reg.
Thanks a lot. That's Stephen O'Brien there of ukpackers.co.uk giving us all of his thoughts on the NFL, and a busy week it was last week. Plenty going on. Just for those of you who are interested, of course, we'll give you that ACCA again. He fancies the Seattle Seahawks to beat the LA Rams, the Miami Dolphins to beat the Los Angeles Chargers, Philadelphia Eagles to beat the New York Giants, and the New Orleans Saints are going to beat the San Francisco 49ers. Now, if you want to increase that to a fivefold, he likes the Panthers to beat Tampa, and that'll bring it up to 19-1. So, some interesting picks there. We'll put that up on our social media channels as well for any of you who are interested in having a look at that. It's time to turn our attention now to horse racing. I'm delighted to be joined on the line now by Dave Weldon, who's had a great run of form lately. Hello, Dave. How are you?
Not too bad, Reg. How's things?
I got very excited last week. 11-1, first race up. I went, here we go. It's going to happen. I think we were on about 100,000-1 if all of your predictions came in, but unfortunately it kind of fell apart then after that.
Yeah, it did, yeah. It's kind of nearly the bad thing to happen and look 15 at the first one goes in a big odds.
Exactly.
And then...
We were getting very excited. Now, nonetheless, you've been having a good run of it of late, so let's keep that going. I suppose before we get into your picks for this week, we got to make a mention of Tiger Roll and the future. You know, pulled up yesterday, Elliot casting a little bit of doubt maybe over Tiger Roll.
Yeah, it was dubbed as a rematch from the Cheltenham Festival last year with Easy's Land, the French horse who beat him so handily last year. But Tiger Roll, this really isn't his time of year. There was good vibes coming out with the Eddie Yard that he was kicking and booking him, which is always going to drive a Tiger Roll, but like he's only really going to be aimed for 2 days, and that's Cheltenham in March and then Aintree in April. So I wouldn't be too downhearted about it. We would like to get a bit more life out of him. Maybe one race too many, we don't know.
Yeah.
But I still think there's still plenty in the tank there. Gordon Eddie's tweet morning with the video of Tiger Roll rolling around in his yard, all well and good, after travelling back last night. So I think White's been an off day, and hopefully this that, because he is a horse for lifetime in that yard, dancing all of that, winning all them races that he has. And hopefully we'll see him out again and back to full form.
And speaking of that yard, what do you make of Jigginstown at the moment? I mean, I know there was the fairly public situation with Michael O'Leary and that, but how are they going? I know COVID is affecting the stables and the studs really badly, but how do you think they're going? Are they faring out okay?
Yeah, well, Gordon's flying at the moment himself. Jigginstown are kind of on the way out of racing, and they said that last year that they're not going to be buying any more horses, and they haven't been buying any more store horses or anything like that from the point of view. So we've seen today JTN Manifest bought a horse and they sell them on Thursday for 570,000 that just won a point. So Jigginstown's withdrawal from that doesn't seem to affect the top area of the market, and they still have a lot of top class horses in training with the likes of Kenny Bromhead, Justin Bryan and Gordon Elliott.
Yeah.
So they're kind of this time of the year you don't really see many horses travelling over to the UK. You might see a couple of this again, Paul Nolan sent a few over. And Robin Towers riding them because he's based over in the UK. So the intention the Irish government made for jockeys was that if it was a grade one or a group one, they didn't have to quarantine when they came back. But Keith Donoghue, who usually rides Tiger Roll, didn't travel over because he wouldn't miss out on 2 weeks of rides in Ireland because it wasn't a grade one. So it's kind of it's tricky at the moment to see what the level of horses are because they're running against each other in Ireland the whole time. But the great thing about Jigginstown is and has always been that their horses always try. You wouldn't say the same about some other big owners who kind of duck and dive and try and beat the handicapper. But Jigginstown horses, they'd run six in the grade one and they'd all run to the line against each other and you might see a 20-1 shot win, but at least you know they were all trying.
Excellent stuff. Okay, let's move on towards today's Lucky 15 then and get our teeth into something to have a little flutter on. I think you're looking at mostly Punchestown and Cheltenham, is that right?
Yeah, two from Punchestown, two from Cheltenham. It's a great weekend racing from both areas. Punchestown, you have the Morgiana Hurdle tomorrow, which is the main race of the weekend, and then you have a great car at Cheltenham tomorrow as well. We'll get into that a bit later, but Punchestown, 12-15, it's a great little race, great two novice chase. Revolves really around two horses, Starver Star and Felix Deji. Starver Star, who finished third in the Champion Hurdle last year, made a good start over course and distance, over the big obstacles. But the preference here is for Felix Deji for Gordon Elliott and Jack Kennedy. He won at Killarney the last time out and he was an absolute tearaway. He jumped brilliantly. I think he should be favoured here. I don't think Starver Star has made as good a transition to fences. And I think he's around 13-8 shot Felix Deji number 4 in the card in 12-15 to get the Lucky 15 up and running.
Lovely.
Then in the 105 at Cheltenham, it's a race for amateur jockeys and conditionals. And in these kind of races, you kind of look for the jockey. And I think the best jockey in the race is Richard Patrick for Kerry Lee. And he's on number 7, Storm Control. He's unexposed. He's a good jumper. And connections are in form. And this is a new trip for him, and I think he has a lot more upside than most of the others, and he's available at number, at around 6-1. That's Storm Control number 7 in the 105 at Cheltenham.
Very good. Okay.
Then back to Punchdown for the 2 o'clock and Call Me Lyreen for Gordon Elliott and Jack Kennedy, hoping to get them a double on the day. He made it 2 out of 2 and winning easily at Sligo, beating much fancied horses in behind. And I think this race isn't really up to much. I think Call Me Lyreen will prove to be miles ahead of these. And a 3-1 makes it's good value there.
Okay, excellent stuff.
Then the final one for the Lux 15 is Late House, number 5 on the card in the 2:15 at Cheltenham. This is the most competitive race of the day. He's available around 11-1. Colin Tizard's horses weren't really firing for the last couple of weeks, but there's evidence to suggest recently that they turned the corner with a couple of winners and a couple of good runs during the week. Late House should have won this race last year. It was coming to the second last, absolutely cruising when he fell. And he's only up a couple of pounds. He went on to win a grade one after that and run well in subsequent races. So I think Slate House around 11-1, number 5 in the card, can go better this year and win the race. You know, it's a really competitive race. Dean Ryan won't stop on to me all week about Al Danter in that race, but I can't really have him myself. And but if that wins, Dean will be an absolute nightmare for the week.
Okay, fair enough. I'm sure you're used to that. Yeah. Well, anything else standing out around any of the cards anywhere else?
Not really for Saturday. There's one big price horse at Punchdown that I thought I'd mention. Press conference has left Jessica Harrington going to Gordon Elliott for the same owners. So it's an interesting change of yard. And he's around 25-1 and 12.50. But it could be just a cider just to see where they are with him. But he's an interesting horse going forward. Sunday is really where the main action is. There's a couple of short prices horses, Fury Road. And latest exhibition, boat running, graded race. They're both odds on favourites and both should really win. And we have a champion hurdle trial, but it's a great one in its own name. Synonymous to Hurricane Fly, who won it 3 years in a row a couple of years back. Abracadabra for Gordon Elliott and Gigginstown take on St. Roy for Willie Mullins and JP McManus. St. Roy looks like to go off odds on and he should take the beating. Abracadabra's had a run. So it's an interesting race.
Yeah.
It tossed a breeze between the two. Okay. And then at Cheltenham tomorrow, there's just one I wanted to mention, and that's Harambe in the 3 o'clock in the Greatwood Hurdle. He's a big prize there, who won it last year and is off a similar mark this time around.
Excellent stuff. Okay, Dave, as always, great chatting to you. We look forward to seeing how they all work out to later on today and tomorrow.
Cheers, Reg. Thanks for that.
That's Dave Weldon there of the Racing Hour podcast giving us his lucky 15 for today. And a couple of little mentions for tomorrow as well. But we'll go with the lucky 15. It's a combination of Punchestown and Cheltenham that he goes with this week in Punchestown to start things off in the 2 as well, but we'll go with the lucky 15. It's a combination of Punchestown and Cheltenham that he goes with this week in Punchestown to start things off in the 12:15. It's Felix Deji at 13-8. In Cheltenham, then we go to the 105 Storm Control, which is a 6-1 shot. Then back to Punchestown for the 2 o'clock. Call Me Lyreen 3-1. And then in Cheltenham, we're at the 2:15, and it's Slate House 11-1 shot. Hopefully, this week the 11-1 shot will come in at the end, and we'll be looking at a finish to that lucky 15 with an 11-1 shot, which wouldn't be too bad. On the line now, of course, we have our own Ken Doherty, all the way from the UK. Hello, live from Bubble Town over there. How are you getting on, Ken?
How are you? Are you well?
Yeah, not too bad. Great form, though, I have to say. A fantastic weekend ahead of us, plenty of sport going on, but I'm loving the Masters. I'm glued to it, and I'm sure you are too.
Oh, it's fantastic, isn't it? And it's great to see Tiger up there. You know, I know Dustin Johnson and, you know, some of the other guys. I mean, we have that guy answer at the top of the table, but Dustin Johnson's up there, Justin Thomas as well. But great to see Tiger and even Phil Mickelson as well.
I know.
Two past champions, you know, doing so well.
Westwood.
It's not the same, though, is it? You know, you do miss the crowd, the roar of the crowd.
Yeah.
Galleries and stuff like that, and it's a completely different look in Augusta, but it's still beautiful. I was absolutely glued to it all day yesterday, you know.
Absolutely. I mean, Paul, of course, Paul Morrison, our producer here, was raving on about Cantlay last week, and he tweeted me last night or texted us last night saying, "Hope you got on it, lads." He's sitting there at 8 under. Paul is smug as can be, but still a long way to go. I think I'm the same as you. I'm on Woods. I kind of like the way he's going as well. Rory's got himself back into it a bit as well, and hopefully Lowry can make the cut.
And you know something, how ironic and how ironic it is for DeChambeau, who said it's only a par 67 for him, and there he was, struggling to make the cut.
I'd love if he misses the cut.
Like, it'd be fantastic, you know?
Yeah, don't disrespect Augusta, whatever you do.
No. Because that course is, You know, you can't just bomb drives everywhere. It just shows you exactly how tough it is, and particularly for the putting and stuff like that. You know, that it all comes down to placing your ball.
Yeah.
And, you know, you've got to manage that course. You can't just disrespect it as he did.
Yeah.
Ken, how are you? It's Peter. How do you feel about Bryce DeChambeau? I know Ronnie O'Sullivan has been quite vocal and quite confident, arrogant, some people would say, about different comments. Yeah. As a sportsman viewing another sportsman, how do you think his other golf pros would have taken just his
attitude? I think they would have been disgusted by him. You know, I think, he's done amazing things by the way he can hit the ball and stuff like that. I think that's great, the way he's trying to push the barriers. That's fantastic. Well, you don't disrespect the traditional course that's been there for, you know, I don't know, many years, but it's steeped in tradition, and you don't disrespect, because we have a saying in snooker that the balls never forgive you. So if you disrespect the table, the balls have a way of coming back in and haunt you. And I think that goes for every sport, that you don't disrespect your opponents and you don't disrespect the game. And when you make comments like that, it's almost like he's invited pressure onto himself, and he's collapsed because of it, you know. Mm-hmm.
And there's nowhere to hide in an individual sport as well.
No, nowhere to hide. You're not like you know, in team sports, because Reggie's been hiding in rugby for years, like getting away
at the
with
bottom
it.
Of a rug.
Anyway, listen, Reggie, I've got a very special guest because I'm lodging in his house at the moment. Jimmy White is here, so I've got to put him on to you.
Oh,
and,
great
you
stuff.
Can have a little quick word with him, okay?
I
know you're
sick
of talking to me, and anyway,
how are you, Reg?
Jimmy, how are you, buddy? You well?
I'm very well, sir. Yourself?
Oh, wonderful. Great chatting to you, Jimmy. I've been watching you very closely. Your form is back in. You're playing pretty good stuff at the minute.
Yeah, we're trying really hard. You know, Ken came round for a cup of tea 3 weeks ago.
You can't get rid of him.
But God love him. We've been practicing really hard, and obviously we'd just be pleased to be playing at the moment. You know what, the state of the world at the moment. So we're going to the next tournament is the Northern Ireland Open, which is in Milton Keynes. It looks like most of the tournaments are going to be there. So it is what it is at the moment, I'm afraid.
Well, I know your form is good. I hope you do well in that one as well. Are you a golf fan, Jimmy?
Yeah, I love golf.
You've been watching the Masters with Ken.
Well, I was actually working yesterday, so I didn't have a chance, but I will be watching today, you know, and it's great to see Tiger, because he's not had any form this season to produce. You know, you can never write him off there. You know, he's still got the game. Exciting. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, excellent stuff. Yeah, no, Tiger is a big pick of mine in that we always go for one or two of them. I suppose Rory is the other one we'd be looking at. He's kind of found himself back into it. A great round yesterday. Got himself right back in there with a 5-under. So he's sitting there at 3-under at the moment. So still a chance for Rory.
Listen, I'd love to see Rory win it. You know, he can be absolutely magical. You know, a bit like Ballesteros.
Yeah.
And, okay, Reggie.
All right, Jim. I lost you there for a moment. Listen, you take care of yourself. We're looking forward to watching you in the next one in the Northern Ireland Open.
Reggie.
And the best of luck in that.
Cheers, Reggie.
Take care. All the best, Jimmy. That's Jimmy White there. And Ken, who has moved into Jimmy's house over in England. Good old Ken, Peter. He knows how to stay in the good spots and then take advantage. Went for a cup of tea and then doesn't leave.
Yeah, I think we could have told Jimmy he might have got some sort of carer's allowance there for looking after Ken, but thanks very much for doing that, Jimmy. And look, great to hear from him. And isn't it funny when we talk about golf and individual sports, there's such a parallel, isn't there? It's such a tough sport to master, and it's so hard to be consistent in one thing. So yeah, it's great to hear from him.
Yeah, absolutely. But Jimmy's an absolute legend of the game, of course, and his game is going really well at the minute. And like I said, that's just so funny. I knew Ken was over there, all right, but I'd forgotten he was still staying in Jimmy's house 3 weeks later. Anyway, look, we'll catch up again. Unfortunately, the line just dropped there a little bit on us. We'll catch up again next week with Ken and find out how everything is going. Still loads to come on the second hour of the show. We're going to be talking rugby, myself and Peter. Declan Drake, of course, is going to be talking to us as well about the GAA. Alan Cawley will talk to us about the football. And just after 10, I'm going to be talking to Mark Ganley about a really new interesting development, N-Pro rugby headgear that's going to benefit players and assist with safety around concussion. Time to turn our attention to rugby now, and I'm delighted to be joined on the line by Mark Ganley, who's the CEO of N-Pro. N-Pro are a fantastic new headgear company for players in rugby. As we all know, concussion is becoming more and more of an issue in the game, and Mark is here to tell us a little bit more about about his new product, which is completely aimed at improving safety, in particular amongst children in the game. Good morning, Mark. How are you?
Good morning, Reggie. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, listen, great to have you on. I'm always very interested to talk to people about any developments that are making the game that bit safer, certainly where younger players are concerned. And we've seen a lot of incidences recently with players coming out from concussion across all sports, not just rugby. We've seen it in football as well, early onset dementia, Alzheimer's, all these various unfortunate diseases that seem to be coming out, and head contact is the main cause for a lot of them. So you guys have decided to address this, and you've got a fantastic new product.
Yeah, we've been working on this for a number of years now. Back in 2013, I read an interview with John Fogarty, the current Irish scrum coach, and you know, he was kind of talking about he was forced to retire through multiple head injuries. But I suppose what really caught my attention was the human aspect of the story. You know, where he was spending kind of days in a darkened bedroom, and you know, it had a major effect on his life. So I had been involved in the development of hurling helmets prior to this, so I had a lot of experience in terms of you know, different materials, different test methodologies. And then my wife was she has a PhD in biomedical engineering, so I went back and I showed her the interview, and that was kind of the starting point. And I said, I think if we combine our skill sets here, we'll be able to hopefully make a difference. So that started us off on a long R&D journey with the product. And ultimately, what we've developed is it's different to a traditional scrum cap in that it's a multi-layer system, but specifically, it deals with impact energy, and it can offer you four times better impact protection than any other scrum cap that's on the market at the moment.
And that's huge. Obviously, anything that improves that type of level of collision is bound to be beneficial. I mean, personally, I was very lucky. I played with John and worked with John over the years. I know him very well, and I know how badly he was affected by it. Personally, I was very lucky to avoid concussions for the most part. I suppose it would be a bit ironic of me to say I don't remember having any, but the reality is, I think only once in my career did I ever have a collision that I would consider to be of that level. So, but so for some players like me, it wasn't ever an issue, but it's huge now for other players. So I think a development like this in your headgear is only a good thing. I suppose you've mentioned it there. What sets it apart? You've touched on it, but what really sets it apart from the other headgears that are already out there?
So when we started developing this, we looked at what was on the market at the moment, and we also looked at, you know, what were the scientific experts saying, and what were the researchers recommending. So, you know, we went about, we said if we're going to make a difference here, like, you know, it's a very, very complex injury, so we're going to have to go about it in a very scientific manner. So in terms of, you know, what sets us apart, you know, we can categorically state, like, we are the most researched rugby headguard in the world, without doubt. We've you know, conducted thousands of tests. In terms of impact protection, we can reduce the impacts to the head by up to 75%. You know, so that's another key differentiator for us. And I suppose another key differentiator for us is World Rugby announced a new global headgear trial last year. It was around this time of year last year, and they set out a list of very kind of strict entry criteria for companies that wanted to partake in this trial.
Yeah.
And Enpro is the only product in the world that has fulfilled all of the entry criteria for that headgear trial. So it puts us in a very unique position.
Oh, well, that's fantastic. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's a major problem for World Rugby, and that's the reality of it. There are many, many parents out there who are concerned, me being one of them, about their children and how rugby can impact on their mental state, their head, their, you know, their brains in effect, and how they get damaged. So for World Rugby to endorse you as one of the products that can be used, that's absolutely huge.
Yeah, so, like, absolutely. You know, parents are very concerned about this. But what we wanted to develop was a product that would give reassurance to parents, because, you know, we're parents ourselves. We've seen the benefits of team sports, you know, to children developing and growing up. It gives them, you know, lifelong friends, lifelong lessons. And ultimately, what we wanted to develop was a product that would reduce the risk of injury. We see Enpro as part of the solution here. So, you know, you talk about World Rugby. Huge strides have been made in terms of reducing this injury, in terms of, you know, when you look at law changes, when you look at the awareness, the education that's going on. And we see ourselves as part of that solution. Like, number one here is proper coaching with proper tackle technique. You know, if your technique is right, it goes a long way to reducing this. But, you know, we want to give reassurance to both players and parents that you're reducing the chances of getting injured. Yeah. Like, we were looking there at some stats that the IRFU released, and in the Irish Schools Senior Cup, they analysed, you know, all the injuries that were occurring and the time loss that they were the players were suffering then. So, on average, in school senior cup in Ireland, a concussion resulted in an average of a 60-day absence from training or from playing. So, like, you know, you'd be used to seeing Leinster senior cup there. Like, it's run off very quickly. If you miss 60 days, you're going to miss the competition, or else by the time you do get back, your place is going to be gone. You know, because it's so competitive. So, what we're saying to both players and parents is give yourself the best opportunity to play. And, you know, we take care of the of the safety side of things. You concentrate on your training and playing and enjoying yourself.
That's fantastic, yeah. And is it being used at the moment, Mark, by any professionals or anything like that?
Yeah, so, like, the product has been designed for children right up to senior internationals. Alton Delan was wearing it recently in the Six Nations.
Oh, very good.
Sean O'Brien is over at London Irish. He's wearing it.
Right.
Yeah, so we've guys all across the Pro 14, Top 14 in France, Super Rugby.
Yeah.
But as I said, it's designed for, you know, beginners right up to senior internationals. It can be used by anyone.
Excellent stuff. And where can people find out more about it and buy it if they want?
Yeah, so if they check out our website, nprosports.com, or else you'll find us across Instagram, Facebook, Twitter at nprosports.
Excellent stuff. Okay, well, you've heard it here, folks. Good Irish company, Mark Ganley, CEO of Enpro Sports, based down there in Oranmore in County Galway, of course. And great to see such a good success story. And as you said, endorsed by World Rugby. Mark, thanks for taking the time to talk to us this morning. And we'll chat again soon.
Thanks very much. Thank you, Bridget.
All the best. That's Mark Ganley there, as I said, CEO of Enpro Sports. And really, really interesting development. 75% higher success rate at protecting against impact in concussion. That can only be a good news story in a game that I love so dearly and that we worry about from a safety point of view. Good news there, Peter. Hopefully that's a success for them as well as a business, but also that it, you know, makes the game safer for everybody.
Yeah, it's great news. And I know there's an awful lot of work and research going on. A friend of mine from school called Matt Campbell is a lecturer in genetics in Trinity College Dublin, and he's been part of a huge number of studies, I know, around this and around trauma and head trauma and concussion. So look, let's hope that all the medical professionals can find better resolutions and better regulations as well to make sure that it's safer and as safe as possible for young people and for people in adulthood as well. So good on him. Sounds like a great company, and hopefully they continue to make great strides.
Absolutely. Okay, we touched on it in the headlines. We want to go into it in a little bit more detail now. Big match last night, of course, for Ireland in the Autumn Nations Cup. Great win is the only way to describe it. A lot was made of this game before the match. There was calls that certain players needed to stand up and be counted. Certainly, you know, players with experience like Peter O'Mahony would have been ones that were questioned pre-match. He had a huge game last night. The likes of Rue coming in the second row to try and make an impression. People wanted to know, is he at that level? And how can he perform? I thought he had a very, very good game. Unfortunately, Johnny Sexton got injured, but Jemison Gibson-Park coming in there at nine as well. Again, we were wondering around the scrum half situation, how things looked there. And he had an outstanding game. I think everybody across the board was talking about how well he performed. Andrew Porter, another one. Tadhg Furlong has been the prop incumbent for a long time now, but he's been injured. And people were wondering about backup. Porter more than proved himself, destroyed the Welsh scrum last night. So in all, it has to be said for Andy Farrell, a very, very convincing start to the tournament for him.
Yeah, I think that's the second game in a row now that John Fogarty, the scrum coach, can be very pleased with the performance of the scrum. So that's encouraging, particularly when there's a number of players who are unavailable. I think in the first 5 minutes, Alan Wynne-Jones, Justin Tipperick, Liam Williams, they kind of signalled their intent with a few cheap shots, and that kind of gave you a sense that they were going to huff and puff, but they just couldn't blow the Irish house down. And I think that Ireland, once they'd managed that early storm, once the defence held out, really, I feel Ireland would be disappointed didn't put more on them, particularly in the first half. We had a 10-point lead going into the break. And really, you know, 32-9 was probably right, could have even been a little bit more. So that's encouraging. Ireland are shorn of a number of players, and I think the challenge has been that Ireland, not unlike England, France, New Zealand, Australia, South Africa, when you read out 5 or 6, maybe 7 guaranteed starts, where may not be as strong in reserve. But actually, I tell you what, you look at these players getting experience. You mentioned Quinn Roo coming back into the team, James Ryan stepping up again on the leadership front, and Peter O'Mahony, you're right, had a really good game. So there's a lot to be positive about. But I know Caelan Doris got man of the match, and we forget how young he is.
He was brilliant.
Yeah.
And that throws up a whole new conundrum for Andy Farrell. I mean, CJ Stander is an outstanding back row as well, no question whatsoever. But they have sort of persisted with Stander at 8 when at times it's been felt that maybe it would be better to see Stander in a wing forward role. And I think Caelan Doris's performance, it puts that into question again. Should we be looking at putting Stander in that 6 slot? And then you get O'Mahony puts in a good performance last night, so that creates issues there. You got Will Connors in the background as well, putting in good performances. You've got Reece Ruddock, who can't even get a look in these days. You've got Josh van der Fleer, who didn't have a bad performance last night. The list goes on and on and on. It's a great position for Farrell to be in, don't get me wrong. But I suppose, realistically, we got to be starting to look towards 2023 and what will the back row be for that time. And I'd like to see some more combos of back row over the course of this whole tournament.
Yeah, and look, this competition provides a great opportunity for Andy Farrell to really have a look, with nothing really at stake in terms of the context of prize money or seeding points. So it's a great opportunity. Actually, the one player who you haven't mentioned, who I'm really looking forward to, because I think he's a guaranteed starter, not just for Ireland, but for the Lions, is Dan Levy. And he's thankfully made those first tentative steps back into getting fitness.
Well, I haven't mentioned him because he's been...
No, exactly. No, but when he's fit, I think he's a guaranteed starter, not just in blue, but in green and potentially red as well.
Yeah.
So, look, all of a sudden, after the doom and gloom 2 weeks ago, if Ireland can just start building that squad depth, Ireland are going to be—they're going to be a little bit of a force, I suppose. The challenge—I'm looking at it from a Wales point of view. God, they're in big, big trouble.
Yeah, you're right. You have to put in a little bit of context on this here. Brilliant performance from Ireland, not detracting in any way from that. Wales were appalling, though. Absolutely appalling. And anybody that says otherise wasn't watching the same game.
The names we're talking about, say Wynne-Jones, Tipperick, Liam Williams, George Knorr coming off the bench. If you're talking about a team 5 years ago, that's very strong. But at the moment, they just look broken.
But they couldn't even string a couple of passes together last night, Peter. You know, that's how bad Wales were. I mean, these names that you mentioned were dropping balls left, right and centre. Bigger, I didn't even see him in the game. Now, fair enough, his forwards weren't getting him any ball. Their scrum was destroyed. Their line-out didn't function. These are big, huge names, and like I get that they're coming towards the latter end of their career, let's say. That doesn't mean they can't catch and pass a ball.
No, and the issue is it's deeper than that. There's a huge, ever since they moved into regionalisation, it hasn't worked. Scarlett's flattered to deceive under Wayne Pivac for a time, but again, they've fallen by the wayside. You know, they bring back in players from like Lee Halfpenny from abroad and stuff. That doesn't seem to work. But of course, they're doing that because maybe they're trying to fill a hole that maybe there isn't talent coming through. So there just isn't an alignment there at all. They've got really big problems. And while it's great when Ireland win and it's great when the provinces win, bigger picture, it's not good news. Scotland now are going to become a bit of a force again. You know, they're going to be quite dangerous. They've shown that they've got the ability to beat teams, and you know, the club sides flatter to deceive at times, but Edinburgh under Richard Cockerill have done well. Glasgow have been improving in recent years. All of a sudden now, Wales have a big series of questions to ask themselves, particularly when you look at losing the defence coach this week, where he was the fall guy for the poor performances in the Six Nations. Mm. They've lost the CEO, and they've got no alignment amongst the teams.
Yeah, Welsh rugby is in
It's going to be, you know, it's going to make for a very interesting period for them over the next year, because they have to introduce more players and greater depth. Yeah. But focusing on Ireland, I think of immediate concern next week is out half. Hopefully Johnny Sexton, when he hurt his hamstring, hopefully it's just a twinge. Then Billy Burns failed a HIA. I thought he was good on his debut.
Mm-hmm.
But now you're talking all of a sudden with no Joey Carberry.
Frawley, Madigan comes back into the equation.
Ross Byrne, I would have thought.
Well, obviously Ross, but I'm talking as backup. I mean, if you've got Johnny and Burns both out, you need someone else. So Frawley comes into the equation. Will Madigan be considered? That's the big question.
I don't think, unless he's pulled from the Ulster squad on Monday, they play Zebra away.
Mm.
That'll give us a bit of an indication whether he is. I don't think so. I think he's been too far out of the cold for a little while. You've got Jack Carty, you know, as well. So, so let's see what way they go. But, you know, that's going to be interesting. We've already got a conundrum with Conor Murray doing so well at that.
And not to mention our back three, we've a bit of a conundrum as well, because fair play to James Lowe. He'd quite the debut last night and performed brilliantly. And you can feel, even though there was no crowd there last night, you know, the false cheers that they put in and everything else. But even yourself watching it, you get a little bit of a lift when you see James Lowe getting the ball. It's all of a sudden, oh, here we go. Come on, what's he going to do? Yeah. And like you saw it last night, he was handing off back rows, Tipperick and players like that at will and getting through those tackles. And it's just exciting to watch him.
Big time. And you look at him, his try scoring ratio for Leinster is ridiculous.
Mm.
It's even more impressive than one every two games. But if you look at it, you know, the black and green colour, James Lowe, Jameson Gibson Park, there was a touch of the All Blacks about some of their performances last night.
Yeah.
And you wonder now, with Keith Earls coming back is great news. Stockdale, okay, was a late withdrawal, as was Ian Henderson. Hugo Keenan, again, looks very comfortable at international level. And you've obviously got Andrew Conway as well, who's a great performer. So all of a sudden, again, when we get Jordan Larmour back, you've got a fair bit of competition, considering 2 weeks ago we looked like we were in decline. So isn't it a funny game? You know, all of a sudden you can get these players back in the mix and the garden doesn't look less rosy.
Yeah, we're going against England next week and it all falls apart and we'll be all doom and gloom.
No,
again.
But it will be tough in England. Yeah, it will be tough in England. But yeah. I think, you know, with England as well, maybe there's a case for a mugging there. Let's see. But it's going to be very, very difficult over in Twickenham. And you know, we're not the finished article, but hopefully there's been enough signs of improvement from last night that we can hope we build on it.
Excellent stuff. Okay, that's the rugby section for this week. Delighted to be joined on the line by the one and only Declan Drake. Morning, Declan. How are you?
Just trying to figure out how to fit on in all the Gaelic Games action this weekend on television, Reg.
I know, it's an absolute
feast of it over the next couple of days. Fantastic stuff. I'm doing well, thanks. Yeah.
No shortage of news, that's for sure. A feast is right. And a feast last weekend, too, it has to be mentioned. Before we get a little look back on some of that, we do have to mention last night the announcement, of course, of Mickey Hart. And after 18 years in charge of the senior team up in Tyrone, he's calling it a day on his career after three All-Irelands, numerous league titles and Ulster championships, and a legacy that will never be forgotten. He's going to take a bit of a break.
Yeah, I would expect that Mickey would be back in some shape or form in the game. He's absolutely married to us, but right up there with Jim Gavin and Mick O'Dwyer is the great managers of all time. What he did in Tyrone is absolutely phenomenal. And of course, we know the personal tragedy and stuff that he suffered in his life as well, in his own family, in losing Cormac McAnallan in that period as well, who really would have been truly one of the great players of the modern generation.
Mm-hmm.
And to come back and to mould the teams the way he did and to keep going the way he did was absolutely fantastic. I think it's a little bit disappointing in some respects that he wasn't able to go out on his own terms. He did ask for another year. He felt there was one more year left in him just to put the structures in place for the future.
Mm.
Down County Board obviously have felt differently, and that's the only disappointing aspect of it, I suppose. But look, it's happened to other managers over the years as well. It would happen to others in the future as well. So, look, Mickey, he was a gentleman to deal with, fantastic football brain, fantastic footballing man. He'll be sadly missed around the scene, but I suspect that it won't be too long before he gets involved somewhere again.
Absolutely, yeah, no doubt about it. And by God, he created some tough teams over the year. There's no doubt about it. I can remember some of those battles. I think it was, we're talking around sort of 2003, 2005, 2008. Those were the All-Ireland title times and the battles. They were tough games. They were tough men that he put out on the pitch in those days. Some would say maybe not the cleanest in the world, but...
possibly not, no. But you look at that early period of the 2000 decade, if you like. I mean, Armagh won the All-Ireland in 2002 and Tyrone came in 2003. It was a really fruitful period for Ulster football, you know.
Yeah.
As you say, it wasn't pretty at times, but the record books would show that he won 3 All-Irelands. Exactly. And that's all that'll matter to the people of Tyrone. And you can understand, I suppose, Reg, the natural emotion, particularly when they won the first one. I mean, those scenes will never, ever be forgotten by anyone that was fortunate enough to be present in Croke Park that day or watching it on television. So I wish Mickey the best for the short-term future. But as I say, I suspect it won't be long until he's back involved somewhere again.
Absolutely. Okay, let's look back on last week then. It was a great start for the Dubs, managing to get a pretty convincing, as we thought it would be, win over Westmeath, 22 points to 11. You caught up with Desi Farrell afterwards. Let's have a listen to what he had to say.
First championship game and a very different championship, so we were happy with the performance. It was a decent performance. I thought Westmeath kicked some fantastic scores. We'd be proud of them ourselves. So we knew beforehand that they had a bit of firepower and were capable of doing a bit of damage if we weren't just on the money. And thankfully we were well focused and heads in the game. And yeah, I think we were defensively very well organised. I thought we actually did reasonably well to pick them apart for some of our scores as well. Goal opportunities weren't going to be too plentiful the way they set up and how well structured they were. So we probably got one at the end, maybe should have been a little bit more clinical, but we're always looking for goals though. I think the application of the players was the most pleasing for me. You know, it is a very different time and different championship, and everyone needs to challenge themselves to be in a position to come with their A game, I suppose, in that regard. So I was happy with how we showed up and presented tonight. I think very happy to have football, and there was a period of time there we were all very concerned whether we'd see this day come or not, you know. So full credit to everyone involved.
Yeah, I mean, Desi there being the way he always is, just being straight to the point and, you know, happy to be back at it. Maybe there's things he felt he could have improved on, but in the end there was quite a gulf between themselves and Westmeath.
Yeah, he had to wait 11 months for his first championship game in charge since his appointment last December, and it's his second one in the space of a week tomorrow. But yeah, there was a lot of positives in it, like 15-6 up at half time, 7 different scorers in the game. Ran out 11-point winners in the end. It's great to see the likes of young Tom Lahiff of St. Jude's, Sean Bugler, Oliver Plunkett, who will get their opportunities and grasp them with both hands as well. He's very keen on the development of these players and the experience they're gaining. It's fantastic. But professional approach all the way through. Kieran Kilkenny was very lively as well, which was great to see. And move upwards and onwards to Laois now at Croke Park tomorrow. But the interesting thing about it, if you look at the players that haven't been involved too much over the last number of weeks, like Paul Mannion, Keane O'Sullivan, Michael Dara McCauley, and Philly McMahon. All these guys are ready and chomping at the bit to come back into the fold as well. So a tremendous selection headaches. But I'm sure he's watched training very well over the last week or so, and it'll be interesting to see how different, if at all, his team selection for Laois is tomorrow.
Well, it'll have to be a little bit different, Declan, won't it, a bit? I mean, he has got names like that, he's got to give them a run out.
No, not necessarily. It's whoever is performing best in the jersey at the time, Reg.
Yeah, but given though, you know, Laois, with all due respect, would be another one that they'd expect to get past. Is it not a good time to look at the squad as a whole in competitive matches? As you said, it's 11 months since he's had a championship match, so to see them working together in different combinations?
Possibly so, but you'd like to get a system and a formation going as well. That's why I say it'll be interesting. I'm sure there will probably be a couple of changes to the team for tomorrow. It'll be good if there is, but it'll be interesting to see later on when the team is announced.
Okay, before I move away from the football, just a quick mention, of course, on the Cork result last weekend. Shock to many, many others saying that leaves the door wide open for the Dubs now, and many more again saying 2020 Mayo.
Biden wins the White House and Mayo wins Sam Sheehy, which would be worse? Look, that was phenomenal stuff, and I mean, Kerry were so wrong last week in their approach and their tactics, and they got done in the end. I mean, there's no way, in my opinion, that they should have lost the winning position that they were in, 2 points up in stoppage time at the end of the game. It was criminal what happened to them, but it's fair play to Cork, you know. They came with a game plan, they stuck to it rigidly, and they got their ultimate reward for keep driving on till the end in the Munster final against Tipperary, which is going to be a very, very special occasion next weekend on the 100th anniversary, of course, of Bloody Sunday. But the Kerry dream is over for another year, and I'm sure there's been a weeping and gnashing of teeth in the kingdom this week, and strong criticism coming their way as well. Does it open it up for Dublin? Yeah, it possibly does, all right, but look, we still have to go and do our business as professional as we always do, and just worry about ourselves and starting again with Leash tomorrow.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, disappointment in the hurling, of course. Lost to Cork last weekend. We knew it was going to be a tough one, losing by 5 points in the end, or was it 6 points in the end? You know, just nothing more to say than huge disappointment.
Yeah, it's like two steps forward, three steps back, really, isn't it? Mm. With the Dublin hurlers at the moment, it's very disappointing last week. We had great expectations and great hopes going down there. We spoke about it last week.
Yeah.
If we could reproduce the type of performance that we did in the second half against Kilkenny, we have an excellent chance. Mm. But I also mentioned to you as well that Cork had been stung by the level of criticism that they'd received around the city and county during the course of the week. And even with five changes in the team, it worked a treat for Kieran Kingston. His team were well in control of the game and dominant, and you'd have to say we're deserving of their victory overall. And their reward for that, of course, now is to play the All-Ireland champions Tipperary in a knockout qualifier this afternoon down in Limerick. So wish them well with that. But for Matty Kenny and Dublin hurling, it's back to square one.
Absolutely, back to square one. Okay, things are going well, though, for the ladies, of course, as they book their place in the TG Carr All-Ireland Senior Championship semi-final after the win against Waterford. You caught up with Mick Bowen after the game. Let's hear what he had to say.
Look, we started really well, we thought. We had loads of zip in that opening quarter, and the tempo of the game was decent, and our, you know, shot to score was decent, and then we just lost our way a little bit. Obviously, the yellow cards had a bearing and just lost a bit of shape. And probably from our own point of view going into the game, like, we lost Goldie and McGrath after last week. Like, they're two huge cogs in our defensive unit. So you're restructuring the team a little bit, and that probably had an effect on it as well. But I don't know, we just never seemed to get going in the game. But ultimately, you know, as we know, 3 weeks' time is what we were looking to get to. And we've something to look forward to. Look, sure, you know, I mean, everyone has been in the same boat in that from the point of view of preparation. Like, you know, it's and obviously we had the championship game under our belt last week. You'd think that's an advantage. Today, you'd nearly say, you know, are they fatigued? Like, ultimately, the optimum turnaround is 2 weeks, a week recovery and a week preparation. That's the same for the rest of the competition. Like, 3 week gaps between games, no, that's not the way it should be. There should be a quarter final in it. Like, ultimately, I would have said to you, Donegal should not be out of that competition last week. They're too good a team. And then next week's game between them and Waterford would mean something, you know. Now it's a dead rubber. So the bottom line is, if they were going to go ahead with it, well, there was an opportunity to do something else there. And I have to say, I felt there was a huge amount of strain on players going into that first game, because it's all fine saying it's a new format and the year that's in it, but these are built for, you know, to be successful. That's what every inter-county player plays at that level for. So look, it is what it is, and, you know, we've to suck it up. But I think this, we'll probably all learn lots of things from this pandemic and revisit things differently after.
Yeah, he's plenty to say there, Declan, about the structure.
He had, Reg, yeah, he had. I wouldn't necessarily agree with him on it, to be honest with you. I think I would take the attitude that we're very fortunate to have a championship this year at all. And it's credit to the LGFA for the system that they've put in place. Just on last week's game, I mean, it was the second consecutive win for us, beating Donegal by 3 and Waterford by 4. showed tremendous character, particularly defensively, in the game when we came under pressure at different stages, you know, when Lauren McGee was sin-binned and Martha Byrne was sin-binned as well. But one really big positive for me last week, and it was great to see it, was young Nicole Owens. Nicole suffered an injury pre-Monaghan last year in Parnell Park. It lost the year for her. She's back with the squad, and to see the smile on her face being involved with the group again last week was absolutely fantastic, as the county reached a seventh consecutive semi-final in the championship. And they'll know their opponents this afternoon, of course, because Armagh are playing Mayo in Parnell Park. Mm. And the winners of that will play the Dubs in 2 weeks' time. So no doubt the management team will be watching that quite keenly this afternoon. But overall, mission accomplished so far, 2 from 2. Into the semi-finals, pardon me. Yeah, absolutely a lot of work to do over the next couple of weeks.
Excellent stuff. Okay, Declan, that was great. Good chatting to you. We'll catch up with you again next week.
Okay, Reg, take care.
Thanks very much. That's Declan Drake there, giving us all of the GAA, and there's plenty going on, no doubt about it. And for the most part, positive across the board for Dublin, except for the hurlers. Now we're going to turn our attention to football. Delighted to be joined now by Alan Cawley of the famous Cawley's Call podcast. Morning, Al, how are you?
Morning, Reggie, how are you? Are you okay?
I'm doing okay, thanks, bud. Yeah, it's a great week, end of sport. I'm loving the Masters. Mm. Enjoyed the rugby last night. There's plenty going on. I was enjoying the football during the week as well. Although the Irish game was a bit disappointing, but I don't think anybody kind of expected a whole lot too different. There were just way too much quality against us. I think we got 4 shots on goal and they got 20, so it was inevitable that we were going to get beaten when you're looking at stats like that. But overall, what did you make of it?
Yeah, much the same, Reggie. It was obviously very disappointing, but I suppose being realistic, as you said, nobody expected us to probably go to Wembley and get a result. And I think it was more reflection for me, Reggie. Look, we're at a different stage in terms of where we are in trying to qualify for tournaments, also under a new manager and trying to change a culture of how we're going to play and maybe put structures in place going forward that will make us competitive in all the tournaments from underage level right up into the senior team. And it disappointed me, really, in the sense that I was looking back through over the years, and you look at England and the standard of player that they have now, and it kind of brought me back to when they ripped up their ideas and their plans after failing to qualify for one of the tournaments back in 2012. And they put structures in place and invested $100 million into St. George's Park, led by an elite director by the name of Dan Ashworth. He's since moved on to Brighton now. But those plans that were in place then were basically to get all the best young talent in an environment, hone their skills, develop coaches, develop everyone really, and get them into a position where exactly what we've seen England the other night, that was effectively their reserve team. And you see the standard of player that they have and the standard of player, young player that they have. And they're just operating at a different level. And in that same 8 or 9 years, you think of the John Delaney era and the waste and the money that was spent over those years and the position we now find ourselves in. And it's very, very bleak, Reggie, in terms of the whole picture for me on Irish football and where we're going. You look at England on the verge of maybe going to a major tournament with aspirations to win the tournament. And we're hoping to qualify. Looks like we're going to drop down to pot 3 for the World Cup qualifying, which makes it even harder. And it just really annoyed me. And I don't normally get annoyed when I'm watching matches, but it just brought me back to the last 10, 12, 15 years of the amount of waste that has gone on and the money that was wasted. No investment in the game here at international level, at domestic level. And to be honest with you, Reggie, we're a good 25, 30 years behind where we need to be, and it's a sad state of affairs.
Mm. Alan, it's Peter here. I see Jason Knight has been called up to the Ireland squad and from the under-21s, and I think my attention certainly will be on that at 12:30 tomorrow against Iceland. Obviously, that was the backbone of Brian Kerr's successful teams in the 90s, was the backbone of that successful period for Ireland that would have kind of resulted in, you know, the Japan and Korea World Cup and whatnot. What can you look at, you know, to try and find the next, identify the next quality green shoots coming through? Is there much there? I know that both squads are probably depleted at the moment, but is there much there for fans to look at?
Yeah, like there is, and this is another reason why you have to back Stephen Kenny, because of the position we find ourselves in. Stephen has come in and he's trying to pick up the pieces. He's trying to build a house with Mala at the moment, Peter, when you think you should be building it with bricks and mortar. And that's the problem, because there's no structures behind him. And I'm not just talking about in terms of the players, but the financial backing as well, that investment that's needed all over at every strand. And we're never going to compete with England. I'm not making that point. I'm talking about other nations of a similar size. and just getting the backing that they need. But Stephen finds himself in that position, and the reason as well why I think we need to back him is because you look at the game the other night, and I'm just afraid people will look at that and they'll just jump to the lazy conclusion that, oh, Stephen's the manager now and it's all his fault, which is not the case. I'm trying to give you a picture of the contributing factors that have gone on here for years as to why we find ourselves in the position that we do now. But you're right in terms of the younger players. The under-21s have a very promising group. Also, at underage level, we've been doing quite well in the last 3 or 4 years. Stephen has added a continuity as well amongst all those managers now that will hopefully filter through to him at the top with the senior level. But all this takes time, Peter, and it takes patience as well. And unfortunately for the fans tuning in, they'll see a scoreline of England 3, Ireland 0, and England toying with us. But you have to understand that we're at completely different levels in terms of where we're operating at the moment. And for Stephen to restructure this and rebuild it, you have to give him a chance and give him time and give him hope and give him all that patience that's needed. Whether that'll be the case, I'm not so sure, because soccer fans are fickle, but that's my opinion on it anyway.
Yeah, I think when we look at a similar population you mentioned there, Scotland, 5.5 million. Now, I know Scotland doesn't have the GAA to contend with in terms of players playing different sports or whatnot. But you look at it, they've got serial league winners at Celtic, they've got Andy Robertson, they've got high quality players like John McGinn who are doing it in the Premier League, and then they've got a Champions League winner again in Andy Robertson. So we are a good bit behind, and winning breeds winning, doesn't it? So it's
absolutely, and like you're talking about the players there, like the last time we developed a top quality player, you're probably going back to maybe John O'Shea. When I mean top quality in terms of a player going on to play with a club at the very highest level, the highest we have now is probably Seamus playing at Everton. And people talk about the young talent coming through, and don't get me wrong, there is young talent. But you look at Adam Ida, who's a name that's been, obviously he's been thrown in, given his opportunity. He's struggling to get a game at Norwich. Malumbi is another exciting talent, struggling to get his game at Brighton. When we were talking about exciting talent coming through years ago with Robbie Keane and Damien Duff, they're working on to play at the very highest level, Peter. And that's not a criticism of the young players at the moment. They're very good young players. It is very, very hard in England. I know that compares to maybe what it was a few years ago also. But this is the reality of the situation, and it's all the more reason why you have to get behind Stephen and in terms of all the underage coaches and the work that's been done. And they need help and investment as well. And again, I go back to the waste that has gone on for years over in that association. It makes it even harder for them coaches and for people to try and develop players now, because there's no clear plan or structure in place either. That's another major problem. I mentioned Dan Ashworth at the start of the conversation, and he had a plan in place. And look at the job that he's delivered at every level underage with England. And you look at the players that they have now. Do we have that? Rube Doctor is there at the moment. He's at loggerheads with all sorts of the different strands of the game here in the country. And they're all at loggerheads rather than them all pulling in the same direction. And it's a major problem and a major issue. And again, as I go back to, we're 25 years behind where we need to be. And you mentioned countries like Scotland and teams like that of a similar size. And we're even behind them at the moment.
Yeah. Well, if I looked at the Wales match as well during the week against USA, they weren't up to much either, though, Alan, and we've got them in this. So, I mean, will people judge this by how we get on against, let's say, similar nations like Wales?
Yeah, that's probably more realistic, Reggie, in terms of the nations that you play against. And obviously, we went out against Slovakia, who were just after qualifying, and we played brilliant. We're well capable of competing, but again, it goes back to my point about Stephen giving that time. You can't judge Stephen after 6 games, and particularly playing against England. So people need to be realistic on that. And I hope they are. And I think so far, the general feeling of what I get out there, people are. Yeah. But the longer that goes on, and again, he's been very unlucky. I've so much sympathy for him, because he's come in on the back of his own personal successes, getting his dream job of managing the country. And it's just been a disaster from so far with all the pullouts and injuries and COVID and all sorts of things. And we just can't afford to be losing 4 or 5 of our best players.
No, we can't.
Even with our 4 or 5 best players, Reggie, we'd struggle against England.
I think people have been sympathetic up to now.
But
will they be less so if he doesn't get the team to perform and get a result against Wales?
I give him the time of coming up to the World Cup qualifying campaign. So these games in the Nations League, they will be competitive. It's not like we'll go out and, whether we win, lose or draw, we'll be competitive in these games. It's not like we'll get trounced by any of these teams. The one area I find where people will begin to turn when it comes down to the qualification for the World Cup. But the problem with the Nations League, Reggie, is these games count to your seeding, and we're on the verge of dropping into pot 3, and it's going to be even difficult then when it comes to the World Cup draw, because you'll have two higher nations, seeded nations ahead of us in the draw. Makes it all the more difficult. But if results are not turning by then, or in terms of us, obviously people being realistic with results, it's not a case of if we were getting beat by Spain, but maybe beating nations around us, people will accept that. But if we're getting beat by nations around us, that's when things will turn. And that's fair enough, I suppose, when it comes to that. But for right now, he has to be given time to try and develop things.
Well, what about the Welsh game then? What's your prediction on that? How do you think it's going to go?
It'll be interesting to see, because obviously Wales have done very well. They've qualified. The game here was a bit of... We probably were the better team. It was on the Sunday afternoon in front of nobody. It was a bit of a non-event, really. But we were the better team in that game, and we probably should have won it. Hopefully, I'm just looking for, again, another good performance. He's obviously been hit with a couple of injuries in the COVID thing with Alan Brown as well again. But it's going to be difficult to bounce back after that England one as well. But hopefully the players can still obviously show the level of performance that we showed against Slovakia and the improvement that we've seen in those games, Reggie. So I'd be hopeful that we'd get a result tomorrow against Wales. Because as you said, they're no world beaters either. Obviously they have a couple of superstars. I don't think they'll be playing tomorrow in Bale and Ramsey. But I'd be hopeful of us getting a result.
Hopefully.
And things need to turn as well. They've been, in terms of just a bit of luck. Like everyone in life, not just in sport, you need a bit of luck along the way as well, Reggie. And
absolutely.
Stephen has had no luck whatsoever. And that's not making excuses for him. I'm all for Stephen, but I'm realistic as well. But he has had no luck whatsoever.
Okay, very good. What about the Callie's Call this week? Who have you got on?
It's the last one of the series. We've gone through 20 episodes, Reggie. So
brilliant.
We've done well, yeah. I'm happy enough with that. And I think backed by popular demand might be Kenny Cunningham on Monday night as our farewell show, yeah. So the league has gone well too. It's obviously finished up. But the playoff for relegation playoff is tomorrow. And Finn Harp produced the great escape getting out of it as well. So Shelburne find themselves in that position against Longford tomorrow night.
That's going to be a tough one, yeah, no doubt about it. Okay, Alan, as always, fantastic talking to you. Really enjoyed that. We'll catch up. And good luck with the finale of the season. And
Brilliant.
Look forward to coming back.
Reggie, thanks a million.
Thanks, Alan.
No worries.
Thanks, Peter.
Cheers. That's Alan Cawley there of Cawley's Call podcast. And if you haven't checked it out, it's well worth checking out. Very, very good podcast. And as you said, I think the last one of the season coming up, he's got Kenny Cunningham on by popular, back by popular demand, as he said himself. Like I said, well worth tuning in for. And that has been pretty much it for us. I mean, it's been a packed show. There's so much going on this weekend and the Masters to look forward to still. But unfortunately, that's all that we've got time for this week on this week's show. I'd like to thank you for listening to us on Dublin's Talking Sport here on Sunshine 106, with thanks to InsureMyVan.ie. The producers today were Blaine O'Hara and Paul Morris. We'll be back again next Saturday. Take care, stay safe, and have a great week.